The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
John Harper in for Drew, who is on vacation. And, you know, we always like to start with good news, but let me just get the bad news out of the way. Stock market, if you looked at it today, I'll give you the bad news right now. It's down 778 points. But here's the good news. I know it's affecting everything. Your 401k. It seems like they're getting us at all levels. Here's the stock market on one side and inflation on the other. But we do have some solutions for you later on here on the Drew Mariani Show to tell you how to navigate some of these really tricky times when it comes to just saving more and spending less. So we do have solutions coming up here on the Drew Mariani Show. But first, let's get you caught up to date on what's going on. And of course, the issues of life, something that we talk about front and center here on Relevant Radio. And I know that you do with your family as well, because now in Indiana, a judge has put the state's week-old abortion ban on hold. And here are the elements of this. Abortion clinic owners argue that the ban violates the state constitution. Here is Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita, who expects a long court battle.
This case was either way going up the ladder. So, you know, we're going to be in a different court, and we're going to be that way no matter who won the initial bout here.
Indiana's seven abortion clinics were set to lose their licenses under that ban. An update on what's happening in Russia and their war with the Ukraine. It's more setbacks, and now Russian authorities are going door to door in occupied portions of the Ukraine, forcing Ukrainians to take sides. This says Vladimir Putin has instituted a draft. Thousands of young Russian men are jamming airports, train stations, and the border. They want to leave the country. Linda Thomas-Greenfield is the United States ambassador to the United Nations. She told CBS this morning that the war is foremost in front of the world leaders in New York for the 77th annual General Assembly.
The Security Council, over the course of the past 6 months, has successfully condemned and isolated Russia, and they are feeling that isolation. We will be ramping that up.
And Putin continues his threat to use nuclear weapons. The U.S. is warning grave consequences if they do. Neither the U.S. nor NATO is saying what those consequences would be if Putin carried out his threat. You'll hear this term coming over the next several weeks going up to the midterms, the commitment to America. The commitment to America, that's the brand new name of the Republican platform that they unveiled today ahead of the midterm elections in 7 weeks in Pittsburgh this morning. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy explains what the new platform's about.
We also ensure fairness, that only women compete in women's sports. We give you a parent's bill of rights. We want an education system that's focused on children, that teaches them to dream big instead of what is happening today.
Naturally, there's some reaction coming from the White House to the GOP plan. Deputy White House Communications Director Kate Berner says Republicans want to repeal the Inflation Reduction Act that right now regulates the cost of prescription drugs.
Leader McCarthy and the Republican members of Congress in the state didn't even mention Social Security or Medicare in their discussion today. We're going to give people more breathing room, their health care premiums, their energy costs, their prescription drugs.
As we were saying at the beginning of the show, it's not a good day on Wall Street, so maybe you're looking for some extra money for Christmas. Walmart is hiring 40,000 seasonal workers. Ben Wink writes for Business Insider.
First off, they already have far more permanent workers than they had during the last holiday season. They've already warned that they've seen some signs of Americans spending less.
Well, let's put that in perspective. It sounds like a lot of hires, 40,000 seasonal hires this year. That's far fewer than the 150,000 Walmart hired last year. You're going to see the weather making news over the weekend. Hurricane Fiona is going to hit eastern Nova Scotia tomorrow morning. Winds of 100 miles per hour. It is the strongest hurricane ever to hit Canada. It's moved by Bermuda. They got some hurricane force winds overnight. And for those of you listening to Relevant Radio on either coast of Florida, forecasters say that you should stay alert. There's a developing storm. It's now labeled as Tropical Depression 9. It's in the Caribbean. It could become a Category 3 hurricane next week and affect you by the middle of the week. Here's ABC meteorologist Ginger Z.
Through the weekend, it should travel up, go over western Cuba Tuesday morning, and it looks like Florida for midweek. Anybody really from Miami and Key West, Tampa, even Orlando. In the Caribbean, the western Caribbean, it's the warmest in the entire Atlantic basin. So we have 85 to 90 plus degree temperatures. That is a lot of fuel for this thing to pump up.
And of course, that's a story we'll continue to follow for you here on Relevant Radio. And here's something that's right out of Star Wars. NASA is going to intentionally fly a rocket into an asteroid in hopes of knocking it off course so it won't hit the Earth. Ed Lu runs a place this actually exists, the Asteroid Institute.
Something like that would level small state, small country, make a tiny change in the velocity, because that's all it takes to protect the Earth in general from most asteroid impacts.
So here's what they're going to do. Next Monday at 7:14 p.m. Eastern, NASA's double asteroid redirection test, it's called DART, send a spacecraft deliberately to crash into the asteroid. And that asteroid, to put it in perspective, how big is an asteroid? They say this one is as high as the Empire State Building, twice as high as the Empire State Building. So put two Empire State Buildings, tip to tip, and it's 525 feet wide. So they're going to go destroy that on Monday. So that's an interesting story that we'll watch over the weekend. And if you're into Star Wars or anything space-related, I know that you'll be on top of that as well. And we'll give you more about it on Monday as well. John Harper in for Drew this afternoon. Let's begin right now with your health. We have talked about vaccines so many times. The vaccine has really dominated the conversation over the last couple of years, certainly with COVID-19. To look ahead, we need to look back for a moment. For 60 years, vaccines against polio have protected you, nearly everyone in the United States, from the disease of polio. You may or may not remember as a child getting that three-shot regimen to protect you from polio. When the vaccine was discovered by Dr. Jonas Salk, that was in Pittsburgh in the late 1950s. At that time, polio was paralyzing thousands of children. And if you've ever seen some of the grainy black and white film, thousands lined up for the vaccines. Well, here we are today in 2022, and within the last 90 days, there's a man in Rockland County, New York, that's north of New York City, who's been diagnosed with polio. 2 weeks ago, the state of New York declared a state of emergency due to the ongoing polio virus transmission. Dr. Robert Tabali practices adult and pediatric medicine at Chicago's Northwest suburbs. He's also a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois. To put this in perspective, doctor, it's good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you, John. And as well, I'm an infectious disease doctor.
Right.
Taking care of adults and children. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And what do you make of this? You almost have to Google polio to learn about the disease. And as I was mentioning, thousands stood in lines to get those vaccines after Jonas Salk discovered it. This was in the late 1950s. And now there are these cases north of New York City. Are these just isolated? But the governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, declared a state of emergency just 2 weeks ago on September 9th.
Well, both yes and no. And here's why. Polio kind of dropped off the list of things that people were really concerned about because of the high effectiveness of the vaccine. And from early 1960s through the year 2000, we gave oftentimes oral polio vaccine, the Sabin vaccine, which is a weakened strain of the polio virus. And that was highly effective. But around the year, you know, late 1900s and early 2000, we were having more vaccine-associated cases of polio than naturally occurring cases of polio. So what happened was they backed off and decertified the oral polio vaccine for use in the United States and only allowed the injectable vaccine, the IPV or inactivated polio vaccine, which is exactly the Salk vaccine. So why is this happening now? Well, people that get the oral polio vaccine can actually have long-term infection in their guts. They can shed virus, you know, when they eliminate fecal waste, and this can be transmitted to other people that might be susceptible. Now, who's susceptible? Well, people who haven't been vaccinated. In upstate New York, there's a significant community of ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jews that will not receive vaccines for any reason. So this man that developed polio was not never vaccinated. Historically, we've seen these kind of outbreaks among Old Order Amish in Pennsylvania, similarly declined vaccination. So we do have circulating virus in the United States now. That's a new finding. They're checking wastewater in Rockland. They've identified it in nearby Orange County and also Sullivan County and now Nassau County, which is a huge county, a highly populated, densely populated county, just outside New York City on Long Island. So what's happening now is people are actually getting infected with the virus. They may have some degree of immunity from vaccination before, and they won't get paralytic polio, but they may continue to excrete virus in their fecal matter. And polio is a fecal-oral transmitted virus. So when my mother was growing up and you were growing up, if polio broke out in your town, they closed down the swimming pools and other that was the big thing that happened. But it can be transmitted if someone's preparing you food or other things. Now, what's the big issue here? We have circulating polio virus in our community now. It takes about 1,000 infections in susceptible people to get one case of paralytic polio, which is what the man in Rockland County got. And that's like a canary in the coal mine. And then all this wastewater testing started happening. Then we find that we've got a significant amount of polio virus in the wastewater. That means that many people are being infected now. If you've been vaccinated as a child, you need to worry. Well, if you're an adult, believe it or not, if you were to travel into an endemic area where polio was circulating, we would tell you to get a booster shot every 10 years. So now if someone's coming from the Netherlands to the United States, the Netherlands travel medicine doctor might tell that person, you need to get a polio shot because there's circulating polio in the United States, but only in the New York area right now. And the polio vaccine, we only give the injectable vaccine, the inactivated vaccine in the United States. And it starts with pediatric vaccinations at age 2 months. It's a very safe and effective vaccine. A lot of people have questions about vaccines after COVID vaccines and questions regarding them. But the polio vaccine is very, very, very safe. Adults can get polio. Children can get polio. A lot of kids are behind on their shots because of COVID and not going to the doctor as they should have. John, are you there?
I'm right here. I want to ask you a question. You talk about adults getting polio, and my card is literally filled from all of the times it's been marked up getting booster shots for COVID-19. Now I got to find space for a polio booster shot. Should you get a polio booster shot just to be sure? I mean, if you're listening in the New York area, and our signals go up into Rockland and Westchester County, Sullivan County, Orange County, where, to put this in perspective, New York City actually has one of the best ratios of polio, the polio vaccine in school kids. Going into kindergarten, 98% of the kids in kindergarten are vaccinated for polio. But as you move this up, and I understand it's religious liberty issues, into Rockland and Sullivan and Orange counties, those numbers drop down to 59 and 60%.
Well, it's a difficult question to answer right now. This is only one person has gotten polio, but the potential for other people to get it is there. Now,
what are some of the symptoms of adult polio, doctor? What are some of the symptoms of adult polio?
Well, this has kind of happened because people that have been vaccinated with oral polio are now in the United States in much higher numbers than they were maybe a year ago or 2 years ago. And that's why this is happening. So what are the symptoms? Well, people get infected with an enterovirus, which causes a stomach, maybe some stomach ache, some diarrhea, fever, just like so many other things. And then people start developing, if they are to get paralytic polio, they might develop some weakness in their lower extremities or other areas of their body. But this is something that happens after the acute viral infection. As I said before, it takes over 1,000 infections of the polio virus in order to get one case of paralytic polio. So it's not a common event, but it is of great concern because there's no treatment, and recovery is unexpected. And as we know, people that recover from polio later in life, decades later, they can have post-polio syndrome where they get a worsening of the symptoms and weakness.
Sure. Dr. Robert Jabali is with us here on the Drew Mariani Show. He practices adult and pediatric infectious disease in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. And Dr. Jabali is also a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois. And we're talking about the rise, especially in some of the suburbs outside of New York City, the northern suburbs, of polio. That's something that certainly hasn't been on the radar in some 60 plus years, but is back again. Do you fear if we have more cases of polio happening across the country with the controversies that we saw and the pushback about getting vaccinated for COVID-19, that more young parents will not get their kids vaccinated and thus open another can of worms with local school districts because you usually have to be vaccinated in order to enroll the kids in school?
Well, you know, that's the big question, dilemma on the horizon. The COVID vaccine, I think most all of us understand, it's a completely new technology. It's unlike any kind of vaccine that has been widely deployed in the past. And the polio vaccine is historically, you know, by far, the injectable polio vaccine is one of the safest vaccines there is.
How do you communicate that to those who are pushing back that it's safe, who just don't believe that?
Well, unfortunately, people have hit, you know, they for the last 3 years, there's been moving goalposts on this stuff. And there's been statements that have been, statements given with great authority and great certainty, which have turned out 6 months or a year later to be incorrect. But we have 60 years of information on the polio vaccine. It's not like it came out after 6 months of study. We have 60 years of experience, and so we can say with great authority it's a highly effective vaccine, a very 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 low side effect profile, and it's very important for people to make sure that their children are vaccinated. You asked a question before about adults. You know, do you need a booster? People are only going to get boosters, and the public health is only going to engage that if there's multiple cases in a certain community. Okay. And then, like say, if in Jericho, New York, which is a town up there in that area, if you got two cases or three cases in that area, they're going to try to vaccinate everybody that uses the same water system, in the same geographic area. And anybody, if one of the people lived in Jericho but worked, 40 miles away, they're going to try to vaccinate in that area where that person worked, and
right.
all the possible contacts.
Right.
But so right now, there's no strong recommendation for people to go out and seek a vaccination for polio.
There's some good news. From Dr. Robert Jabali here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Michael's joining our conversation in San Diego. You can too at 888-914-9149. Hi, Michael. You're on with Dr. Jabali.
Hi, doctor. I appreciate what you do. Thanks for coming on. You just mentioned something about the high number of individuals who are orally vaccinated and referenced the numbers having increased in that population the last year or two. Is it safe to say the individuals that are most at risk have immigrated here recently, whether legally or illegally? And is that the reason that we are seeing this outbreak spread so rapidly, or the potential for the outbreak to spread so rapidly? I can take the answer off the line, but I appreciate hearing what you do and raising concerns as well.
Michael, that's a great question, and I know one that's on the minds of many of our Relevant Radio listeners, Doctor.
Well, people may remember about 10 years ago there was a paralytic flaccid paralysis that occurred after children got infected and they had high fevers. Turned out to be that was due to something called enterovirus DV68, which is in the same family as the polio virus. We never saw that in the United States, really. And then it turns out that a lot of Central American folks had it, and we had a large influx of Central Americans in the United States. And so they brought this with them. So what's happening with the polio is the people that get vaccinated with oral polio vaccine, which is nobody born here in the United States gets that. But what happens is they can get a chronic shedding condition in their gut. Not everybody, but some people do, where they're infected for a long period of time and they shed the virus in their stool. And those are people who have gotten vaccinated in countries where there's very high incidence of polio. And those would be mostly, you would consider them to be, you know, third world countries, Central America, Africa, Yemen, Somalia, countries in Asia, and so on. And that's the reservoir from which we're getting circulating polio in the United States.
Right.
Now, I'm not trying to be mean to anybody or anything, but that's just the objective truth of the matter.
Sure. Dr. Robert Tabali with us today. We're talking about the rise in some cases of polio. It's happening in some of the New York suburbs, and it's something that we need to keep an eye on. Regina's out in California listening today. Regina, welcome to Relevant Radio. You're on with Dr. Tabali.
Thank you, Drew and Doctor. I appreciate that. I'm 83 years old. I had polio when I was 5 years old. So that was back in the 1940s. It was not a vaccine at that time. They diagnosed it with a spinal tap, and I had the paralytic form, and I was in an iron lung for, I can't remember how long, but a lot of prayer is, and I feel I had a miracle, and that's what the doctors told my mother, that it is now a vaccine. It takes years for a vaccine to be developed. And I am basically an anti-vaxxer because, to me, COVID is not a vaccine. It's a shot. And they haven't had enough time to develop it to be a vaccine. And that's why people that get the shots and all the rest of the stuff, the boosters, are still getting it, the disease. And I am perfectly fine. I'm not crippled. My mother did physical therapy with me, and I'm just, that's my thought on that. And I don't think people should be afraid to get the polio vaccine because it truly is a vaccine.
Well, thank you for your comments. And as we all want to point out, there's no commonality between COVID and polio and COVID vaccine and the polio vaccine. There's no commonality other than an attempt to prevent problems. But the polio vaccine, if someone's successfully vaccinated with the regular vaccine strategy, they won't get polio. You know, they can, I don't want to say they can get exposed heavily, but they won't get polio. They won't get paralytic polio. They may get a polio viral infection, but it won't ascend to paralytic polio. So
important to make that distinction. I just want to sneak in one more call here. We're going to help out Aubrey in Minnesota. Aubrey, you get the last word with Dr. Tabali here. We've got about 60 seconds. Go ahead.
Hi, Doctor. I was just wondering if you could speak about the correlation between, you know, active polio infections and people having tonsillectomies. So if they don't have the tonsils, they're much more likely to get severe cases of polio. And also, you know, if they're vitamin B deficient, they would be much more likely to get the paralytic case. Thank you. And I'll take my question off the air.
Okay, Doctor, we've got about 60 seconds.
Okay, I don't know if she said vitamin D or vitamin B. We're finding out that vitamin D has significant effects on how the immune system works and survival from heart attacks and ICU stays and COVID and everything. So I'm a big proponent of people taking supplemental vitamin D. But I'm unaware of the tonsillectomy issue. Tonsils are basically like big lymph nodes, and they make antibodies. And we do know if somebody has tonsillectomy and an appendectomy, which is also this type of lymph node type tissue to make antibodies, they have a higher incidence of certain illnesses if you have both the tonsillectomy and the appendectomy.
Wow.
But I don't know of any, there may be, but I don't know of any linkage between that and developing paralytic polio.
There you go. That
might be literature from the 1950s.
I don't have my tonsils. I still have my appendix, but so much has been taken out of me, doctor, that if you get close to me, you can actually hear the ocean. because that's how empty that's inside there, really. Dr. Robert Tabali practices adult and pediatric infectious diseases in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. And Dr. Tabali is also a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois, putting the polio story in perspective. And I'm happy that we were able to answer some of your questions and to really put that in perspective. Dr. Tabali, thanks. God bless.
Thank you very much. God bless all the listeners.
If you're listening in Texas and a number of other states across the country and hearing my voice on Relevant Radio, you've probably done a double take looking at a billboard that was paid by the taxpayers of California. What was on that billboard? We'll explain coming up here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
I think abortion is the greatest destroyer of peace. And therefore, if the mother can kill her own child out of fear of the child, I suppose, then that's a great poverty. Any nation, not only here, but any nation who allows the destruction of the innocent, of the helpless child, it's a sign of great poverty.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's St. Mother Teresa talking about the issue of abortion, one of the great issues that not only faces us as Catholics, but faces us as a world population. And very often you hear, and I've heard Father Rocky say this, and it's true, what starts in California often has a way of finding its way across the country. Really. And here's an illustration of that point. If you're listening right now, if you're in Texas, if you're in Mississippi, Ohio, South Carolina, South Dakota, you've probably done a double take when you've seen a billboard that reads, "Need an abortion? California is ready to help." Those are billboards that are up in those states that ban abortion. Now, who's paying for those billboards? If you're listening any place in the great state of California, you're paying for it. Taxpayer dollars paid for those billboards. Governor Gavin Newsom's ad campaign is targeting women in states that ban abortion, saying, "Come to California." The politics behind the billboards is that Governor Newsom, a Democrat, probably is going to run for president in 2024. Now, the bishops of California, led by Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco, and you heard him here on the Drew Mariani Show after he issued a very sternly written letter to the faithful in the Archdiocese of San Francisco and communicated his thoughts, as the bishops have across California, with the governor. They've all been very critical, sharply critical of the governor in this abortion-for-profit ad campaign. Kathleen Domingo is joining us now here on Relevant Radio. She's the executive director of the California Catholic Conference. That's the public policy arm of the bishops of the state of California. Kathleen, welcome to Relevant Radio. It's good to have you on.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be with you.
Yeah, I know it's the radio and you can't see me shaking my head, but it's unconscionable that someone, because we've all been in those meetings, right? We've all had brainstorming meetings at some point in time, whatever your walk of life is, where you all put ideas into the hat. I cannot imagine the immorality of the brainstorming meeting in the state of California, where they said, okay, let's spend $615,000 of hard-earned money from California taxpayers. And hey, let's put up billboards and say, "Come to California, need an abortion? California is ready to help." What's your reaction?
Well, the billboards, really, I think unconscionable is exactly the right word. We know it's a political publicity stunt. We know that Gavin Newsom, you know, is out there sort of trying to stick it to governors in red states. He's trying to, you know, export what he calls, quote unquote, the California way of doing things, which apparently now means, you know, unlimited taxpayer funded abortion. But I think, you know, for me, I mean, the head shaking moment and sort of the, you know, the fist pounding or whatever reaction you want is when he actually quotes the gospel. I mean, that's just, you know, you wouldn't do that to any other faith. You wouldn't sort of take those liberties, you know, but Christianity apparently is up for grabs. And in a particular way to say, love your neighbor as yourself by making sure that your neighbor can find access to abortion. I mean, that's just terrible. That's, you know, and it really almost becomes demonic in a sense, right? That we're twisting the words of Jesus so much to be promoting abortion, that it's just unconscionable is the right word. There are almost no words. At a certain point here in California, we run out of superlatives for what's happening.
And the governor has pledged nearly $200 million. And again, you got to watch the language of this reproductive health. That is a term that we've heard so many times. And it's, of course, saying we kill babies. That's what reproductive health is in the nomenclature of those who are pro-choice. Let's not mince words here. As a lobbying arm for the bishops of the state of California, I know that you have had conversations with those in power in the state, in Sacramento. What do they say when you explain that life is from the moment of conception until natural death? There have to be some Catholics in the room.
There are Catholics in the room. And we find a lot of common ground when we talk about all kinds of things, like paid family leave, and let's help moms and women and children and families, and let's really make sure that there's a social safety net so families can thrive in our state. There's a lot of common ground around all of those issues. But when we get to abortion, the narrative is not only so strongly ingrained, but it's also really forced by the Democratic leadership, unfortunately, in California, on anyone who wants to hold any position in the state legislature, that there's really not an option for anyone to not follow. And this year, in a particular way, Governor Newsom created the California Future of Abortion Council, who came out in December with 45 different things that they thought could be done in California to further abortion in our state. We already have some of the most permissive abortion laws in the world, in fact. And so then this year we saw that. We had almost 20 different bills that expanded abortion in some way. The abortion workforce, paying for abortion, of course, is really what captures the headlines and really the most egregious, I think, for all of us in California. That $200 million, you're absolutely right. And then an additional $20 million after he promised he wouldn't, specifically for women from other states coming to California to pay for things like travel and accommodations and child care
And this was put into the hotly contested budget. There was a big tug-of-war in Sacramento at the end of June over the budget, and there's $20 million in there, and it's called the Abortion Practical Support Fund. $20 million to say, hey, come to California for an abortion. It's amazing. Given the give and take that was going on and the people who were in need across the state of California who were cut out of the budget so $20 million could be in for abortions.
That's exactly right. And so, California is very, very famous for our homelessness crisis, for having more people incarcerated in our state than anywhere else in the world, for, you know, all of these, for more children in the foster care system than anywhere else. I mean, we have so many needs in California, and we have this enormous multi-billion-dollar budget surplus. And yet the priority this year, as you said, things got cut out of the budget that were really important and that we were hoping for. But all of this extra money added for abortion, it really is, it's sort of a freight train just moving through California, that this is the program. This is what they want. And I think in a specific way, you talked earlier in the process of the program about exporting. California is exporting certain things. And this is really something that I think our legislative leaders want very specifically to export across the country. And so not only are they calling out those red states and even purple states that are enacting some forms of restrictions around abortion, and even in some cases bans, but they are specifically wanting to reach out and do what they can to influence those states to say, absolutely not, that is not the way that this society should be run. And it's just, it's incomprehensible that the state of California should have that reach and that ability to try to do that and think that that's an appropriate use of the California legislature.
And here's some of the language. The messaging from many of Governor Newsom's abortion ads is very sharply critical of Republicans, as you might imagine. And they're successful bans for abortions, as we've seen in so many states across the country. And this is, and I'm quoting now from one of the ads from California. This is the language. And it's specifically, if you're in Texas, you may have seen this ad. You may have heard it at some point in time. Quote, Texas does not own your body. You do. And there's an image of a woman with her hands cuffed behind her back. I get chills just talking about it. I mean, I'm embarrassed to talk about it as a Catholic. But, you know, that's what's out there. And that's so let's talk a little bit about how we push back. I mean, at times you kind of feel defeated sitting in the pews. So how do we start pushing back? Because I know this discussion, this debate about abortion, it's in a very public platform on billboards and what we're talking about with gubernatorial and possible presidential elections, but it starts in our own kitchens and discussions with our families, doesn't it, Kathleen?
Absolutely. And so, you know, the bishops of California this year have come together in a way that is surprising to my colleagues, even in other states. We have 12 dioceses in California, and, you know, unanimously our bishops have said this is our top priority for the year. This is something that we need to absolutely work on. We need to be supportive of women and children and families. And so here in California, we are running sort of two simultaneous campaigns, if you will. One, of course, is an advocacy campaign. So, you know, all during this legislative year, we were opposing all of those terrible abortion expanding bills and doing everything that we could to amend them if possible, recognizing that they would all pass because we have a 3/4 majority of Democrats. And as I said, you know, not to bag on any one particular party, but in the state of California, you cannot be a pro-life Democrat. At the same time, we are now faced with a constitutional amendment. And this is the first time our constitutional amendment would remove all restrictions around viability for unlimited abortion, late-term abortion, all taxpayer-funded. And this is the first time that voters in the United States have an opportunity to specifically vote about whether or not they approve of late-term abortion without any restriction. So this is something that we're actively opposing and actively working on in our parishes, through our bishops, through our churches, through even, you know, our schools and ministries, and the Knights of Columbus have been wonderful for us. So this is our opportunity now to say, okay, we couldn't do a whole lot with the legislature, but we now are the voters, and we can show that the voters of California are not as extreme as the legislature. So that's something really positive that we're working on. The other piece is, at the same time, the bishops have said, let's also make sure that we are showing what we do as the church and what we have done for, you know, over 2,000 years, which is take care of people and accompany people in need. We recognize that these are very important decisions. Like you said, the conversations take place at the dinner table, and families that are in need are really struggling, and they want to do the right thing, but they need help doing that. And so we have a campaign called We Were Born Ready, which really means that as Christians, as Catholics, we were born for this moment where we can stand in the gap for women and children and families and accompany people with real practical help. And so we're doing a lot to make sure that people in our parishes know where to go, know what resources are available, and are equipped to help. So kind of both at the same time, the advocacy piece and then also the service piece.
You can join our conversation with Kathleen Domingo, the Executive Director of California's Catholic Conference, right now at 888-914-9149. We're talking about Gavin Newsom and his very aggressive stand on being a destination for abortions, to the point where he spent six figures on billboard campaigns in states all across the country, in addition to $20 million approved by the legislature in this year's operating budget to say, you want to come to California? We'll cover your airfare. We'll cover your hotel expenses to come to have an abortion. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And something very interesting about the state capitol, not only the building, but the city of Sacramento, we'll unveil that for you. And it's eye-opening and perhaps even a First Amendment issue next on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
This hour sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
You can't be a half saint. Be a whole saint or nothing at all. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Drew, this afternoon, Drew is on vacation. We're talking about issues of life. Abortion is still legal in California. Governor Gavin Newsom is putting $20 million behind that. That's been approved in the state budget that took effect just a couple of weeks ago. And that will provide a cash of $20 million for women who want to travel to California to get an abortion. In fact, the governor has spent $615,000 of your tax money, if you're listening in California, for billboards in some six states, inviting you to come to get an abortion in California if you so wish. Obviously, the bishops of the 12 dioceses of California are pushing back. You've heard the voice of Archbishop Salvatore Cordileone, the Archbishop of San Francisco, on the Drew Mariani Show, along now with Kathleen Domingo, the executive director of the California Catholic Conference, which is the public policy arm of the bishops of the state of California. And your voice, too, at 888-914-9149, especially if you live in California, 888-914-9149. Joe's in Sacramento listening to Relevant Radio 1620. Joe, you've got something that is just astounding when you tell us about standing up for your right for life in California and Sacramento. Welcome to Relevant Radio. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity to talk to the to you and the people of California. I drive by Sacramento, and there is no picketing. There's no pushback at all at the Capitol building. We need that support. We need to be to show ourselves out there. So I'm quite old, and I don't know if the energy is there that I would require to do something like this, but I just wanted to mention that over the air so that others might hear.
Joe, thank you. That really is a call to action, Joe. And what you can do is the power of prayer, because we have seen in the Memorare campaign that we've run here and continue to run at Relevant Radio, the Memorare is to overturn Roe versus Wade, and the power of prayer. And that power of prayer is never going away. So that's what you can do, Joe. And that is also the call to action.
That I do.
And that's the call to action based on your voice and others here at Relevant Radio, is to continue the power of prayer. And especially as we were just talking the other day, St. Michael the Archangel to defend us in battle. And this is a critical battle of life and death. Joe, thank you so much for listening. Teresa's in Covina, California, here with Kathleen Domingo. She's listening to Relevant Radio 93KHJ. Hi, Teresa. Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
God bless you, both of you, and Relevant Radio listeners. First and foremost, how are you and the bishops reaching out to the Hispanic people? They are not interested in politics in my church, and I do rub shoulders with them, and they do not know what's going on here. They don't know their children and grandchildren can be taken and have their penises cut off. I mean, besides, you know, the abortion issue. We are ignorant of what's going on, and yet they keep voting Democrat. Please, what plan of action do you have specifically for the Hispanic people? Thank you.
Kathleen?
Yeah, thank you so much for your question. So I agree. Our Latino community throughout California is very important to our effort. We know that they are hugely pro-life, but you're right. A lot of times they're not involved in politics in the same way. Very often maybe they're immigrants and they're just not, you know, either eligible to vote or haven't registered to vote or just don't know how important that is. And so I would echo that. So everything that we are doing is definitely bilingual. In fact, we've got Vietnamese resources, Chinese, Korean. We're really making sure that we're hitting everyone in California that we possibly can. And our bishops and priests, in a very particular way, have been focusing a lot of effort to make sure that you're right, that folks who may not be as aware about these topics are learning about them now. But I would suggest that that's something that we should all be doing in our parishes and our local communities, because there's only so much that we can do from a state level, from the top down. A lot of this has to be involvement in the parish level. So if you're in California, you're listening, I would encourage you, start having conversations at the level of your parish. If you're in a prayer group, if you're in a Bible study or any other ministry at your parish, if you're, you know, hanging out with your neighbors, or if you're in a school and have an opportunity to talk about Prop 1. But we know for sure, especially around late-term abortion, which is Prop 1 that we're fighting right now in California,
is that 75% of Californians oppose late-term abortion. But what they don't know, because we're trying to say it, but we're fighting against, you know, this vast machine of misinformation, is that Prop 1 will legalize abortion through all 9 months in California. It does a whole bunch of other disastrous things, too. It's really, really bad. So the more that we can, at that grassroots level, at that dinner table level that we talked about, but even just, you know, within our community group, talk about this as much as possible and help people to understand that this is a hugely big need and an important moment right now for everyone to get involved. This is not a time to sort of sit back and have someone else get involved. It's a time for all of us to really put the brakes on the abortion machine in California.
We are talking about, yeah, the big abortion machine in California, fed by some $20 million in the state budget from Governor Newsom and another $600,000 in an ad campaign that is happening in states around the country, inviting women to California to have abortions, all expenses paid. Juliana is in Palm Desert, California. Juliana, welcome to Relevant Radio. You're on with Kathleen Domingo.
Thank you, and amen to your call for prayer and sacrifice, and fasting is what the bishops asked us to do also at one point. But I wanted to thank Relevant Radio for making me aware of a film called The Matter of Life, and that was released in May in some theaters. And short notice, we did get a number of people interested enough, and they brought some people to see the film. So I highly, highly recommend people looking into it. It's available at your parishes. It can be, you can screen it at your parish. There are different methods to that. But what's so compelling about it is that it's a very informative, very sensitive, very realistic, and also hopeful film that shows you things like Students for Life and new initiatives that are supporting women and children, the unborn, without judgment of the women who have the misfortune to choose an abortion, or anyone, for that matter, who's on the other side right now. Just rallying the good for a well-informed choice for life and the preciousness of life. And the testimonies on it are very compelling because they're people who were directly involved in promoting abortion, as in performing abortions or making sure that they were readily available, telling you some of the backstory, the real sad story of what really goes on, and then the miraculous story of how they changed their view. So it's very, very hopeful.
I've seen that movie. It is very powerful, Juliana. I'm glad you mentioned that. It was here in my notes, and I wanted to get that on the air, and I'm so glad that we're able to amplify your voice. Thanks for listening in Palm Desert, California today. Dalia is also in California. Dalia, welcome to the Relevant Radio Drew Mariani Show. You're on with Kathleen Domingo as we talk about abortion being funded in California. Welcome.
I'm calling because I never hear anything from the pulpits. I go to different churches. I never hear anything about abortion from the pulpit. That's what we need. We need from the pulpit.
Kathleen, speak to that a little bit, because obviously those directives at times come from the bishops in the 12 dioceses across California. What are the bishops saying to the pastors in those individual parishes to perhaps become more aggressive from the pulpit about this issue, this literal issue of life and death?
So every diocese right now is working really hard to make sure that all of the materials are making their way out to parishes. And in fact, a couple different Sundays have been set aside. Sacramento, where I am, has already done one, and they're a little bit ahead of other dioceses. But there are a couple of Sundays coming up where we have created materials. So homily talking points, bulletin inserts, all kinds of catechetical resources. And then we did some great webinars where we had over 500 priests from all around the state join to really talk about how can we do that and have, you know, examples of how to give homilies that are really impactful, but also sensitive and pastoral. So I think there's a lot of engagement. If you haven't heard it yet, I'm sure you will. You know, the other thing that I think is just wonderful for everyone to be involved in is all of the bishops of California are joining in a novena to Our Lady of the Holy Rosary. It starts September 29th, and the bishops are every day doing a different video in English and in Spanish and inviting people to listen to what they have to say, a little reflection,
and then pray a decade of the rosary every day to defeat Prop 1 and to defeat abortion in California and for, you know, this building of a culture of life. So I would encourage everyone to get involved in that because that's a real opportunity for the bishops of California to have a moment to speak directly to all of the faithful in California about what they would like to see and how they would like us to join together.
Josephine's in Sacramento. Josephine, what are you hearing in your parish?
I attend an all-Hispanic parish in Sacramento, California. And I just want to say that for the last three Sundays, our priest has been telling us from the pulpit to vote no on Proposition 1. And he explains the proposition and he emphasizes for all of us to vote no on Proposition 1.
That's great, Josephine. And I'm glad that that priest, that's a courageous priest, because it's very difficult, as you know, Kathleen, for some to talk about politics. And sometimes, and I've in my own parish, where the priests have been aggressive at times to really talk in no uncertain terms about issues of life and death and abortion, I have seen priests applauded at the end of those homilies. And in one particular case, at a 1210 Mass, I saw somebody stand up and yell at the priest because he didn't agree with it. But that's where we are. So the power of prayer, the power of fasting, and of course, the power not only of Relevant Radio, but of you and I to get the message out. Kathleen Domingo, Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference. Count on our support here at Relevant Radio, Kathleen. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me today.
John Harper in for Drew on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.